Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk program. Presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. And with us today, Family Court Judge David Guyton. We'd like to get together with him at least annually just to check up on him, see how he's doing, make sure he's holding everything together. He looks all right. He looks just fine. I just asked him over just before we started, did you always aspire to be a judge? And it was interesting. You really didn't have any thoughts about being a judge until somebody said, we need you to be a judge.
I had several attorneys when Judge Woods retired who asked me to consider being a judge. And so I looked into it at that point and just said, God, if that's what you want me to do, open the doors. And if it's not, you can slam it in my face. And that's fine, too. But I took it as a high compliment, and I hope I've fulfilled what they expected.
Oh, I think you have. You've been a judge now how long?
Family court, almost, it'll be 11 years in April.
Golly, day. 11 years. That's hard to believe. Okay, so you see, you've had all kinds of little fun things drop in your lap, but we're all living in this COVID world, and you've had up to now, you've had situations where the courtroom has been totally closed down, then it went virtual, then we got back together, and now here we go again. Explain what's going on here.
Well, of course, with our new family courthouse, we started moving in on Friday, March the 13th, had court Monday morning, March the 16th, and then the Chief Justice sent out his memo that said, you got to stop court except for all emergency cases. And so we did, and we still held court Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We never shut down the courthouse, thanks to our clerk's office and our county council for giving us a new courthouse with lots of space, and then now also with plenty of technology, it's allowed us to go forward virtually in many ways. But we got past that, and we've got to the point where we were doing more live hearings than virtual. And then as of last Wednesday evening, the Chief Justice sent out a memo to all of our courts, once again telling us not to have live proceedings except for, in family court, DSS, emergency cases, juvenile detentions, bench warrants, and orders of protection for domestic abuse. And so that was 6 o'clock Wednesday evening, and we started scrambling to try to give people notice for today, because it went into effect today.
So how effective was that?
Well, with a lot of hard work through our clerk's office, my administrative assistant, and others, we've got everyone notified for this morning, and the first case didn't go so well because the platform for our virtual courtroom went down for about 30 minutes. After that, it came back up, and we've been able to move along and do fairly well with our hearings, and we'll start back at 2 with I have an adoption at 2 o'clock that will be all virtual.
So, in essence, what happens here is you have everybody scheduled to come to court, and all of a sudden they have to get in front of a TV monitor or a computer monitor and start pleading their case then. Is that right?
That's right. They basically, what happens is they are told how to go to a website and hit two or three clicks, and then they will be in the waiting area of my virtual courtroom. And there's each judge has their own virtual courtroom. So when they're sitting there, when I go to open my virtual courtroom, I see them, you know, waiting in the lobby, so to speak. I admit them. Hopefully their picture and their sound comes up, and either through their computer or their cell phone. So if you got a cell phone, we can make it happen as well. Although those may just be audio as opposed to audio and video. But we were able to get people on, and you can hear and see each other. It's a weird feeling to have someone and say, raise your right hand and swear them in for their testimony when they may be sitting at home, or they might be in their car, wherever they may be. But it's working fairly well.
Has anybody yet pressed the case of taking the oath virtually, whether it's the real thing?
No, and you know, that's not going to be a big deal. And if we do get them just by audio, obviously I can't see whether they're raising their hand or not, but as long as they state the, you know, I do, or I swear, or I affirm, then we're good to go.
So here you are. I would think if I were a judge, I would want to see everybody's faces. I'd want to see their movements. I'd want to see their emotions, just to figure out whether I'm getting the true story or whether I'm getting a bunch of hocus pocus. Are you able to do that as effectively in a virtual world?
I don't think so. When it comes to assessing credibility, we're trying to determine who is telling the truth. It's a lot better to be able to have those signals there in the courtroom. Now, again, if we can see and hear them okay, it's not that much different, but it's nice to have somebody in the courtroom to where you can see how they're moving around, their body language.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of signals you can pick up.
Whether they're sweating or not.
Yeah. Well, you know, at home, the heat could be on too high. You never know. But,
that's a sign of a good judge, giving the benefit of the doubt right there. Well, does this slow down your process of getting through the mountain of cases that you have to get through every month?
It does, and part of it may be the virtual aspect, but a lot of it is currently we are staggering cases, or we've been staggering cases, so we wouldn't have too many people in the courthouse or any courtroom at one time. We used to do hearings. Some hearings we could do in 15 minutes and push through them because they're just kind of going through a checklist and getting certain things done. At this point, you know, getting the virtual courtroom up, making sure it's working, getting them into the courtroom. And then in court, when you're talking about documents or things that need to be presented to the judge, marked as potential exhibits to be admitted into evidence, you can't really do that virtually. So, you know, that creates a situation where maybe if a contested case is coming up, and it's going to be hard to do truly contested cases with a lot of issues involved because, you know, the attorneys would have to have agreed upon what documents they have and stipulated them. Hey, we don't have any problem with this, or because if you've got objections or if you're trying to just bring it into court at the last minute, then that's going to create problems virtually. So there's definitely things that slow us down or potentially even impossible.
So there's more paperwork in a virtual world than there is if you're just doing a face-to-face courtroom?
It's not necessarily more paperwork, but it's how it's presented to a judge. So we have temporary hearings. In those hearings, even when they're in person, attorneys will present a package of information to the judge. They don't have to do it per the rules until they walk into the courtroom, and then they give the other side theirs as well. Well, now because we're going to be virtual with our temporary hearings, We had a meeting Friday afternoon, and our now Chief Admin Judge Tom White determined that we would need to require attorneys to turn in their temporary packets 72 hours in advance, so that they can get them. One, they have to go to the courthouse, and there's a 48-hour quarantine on papers at the courthouse.
Oh, my gosh.
That's been in effect for a few weeks now. That slows some things down. There's a lot of little things that come up here and there.
So is there a special room over there where all this paperwork just sits?
As I've seen, there's a row of chairs with some boxes in them, and depending on what day and time it comes in, they go into a certain box, and once it's been 48 hours, they come out. But over the last few weeks, if you were to see something that's kind of comical, it's when we are in court and a document has been brought into the courthouse, we'll allow it the day of the hearing to go straight to the courtroom. But my bailiff will hold the document and spray it with Lysol and shake it a little bit. And so I end up coming home smelling like Lysol, but pretty well disinfected, you know. So,
well, I've had the pleasure of touring the plush but not overly ostentatious brand new family court. But it's a masterpiece. It's beautiful. You got a lot of people there who support the work of the court. I don't know what all the names are or what their functions are, but when you look at the virtual world compared to the in-person world, does this create more work for them in terms of doing this 180-degree switch?
I think it does. It just takes more time to be able for, say, juveniles, public defenders and solicitors to be able to talk to their representatives, their clients, their witnesses. Department of Social Services is kind of the same way. And people are spread out, and some people are not working from an office. They may be working at home. I will say that most of the clerk's office and those who also work at the courthouse are working some staggering shifts, so that if you had all the clerks there the same week and COVID spread, then you might have to shut the whole courthouse down. But with half on and half off, then if something did happen on one particular day, you didn't necessarily have to close everything down. You'd have workers to come in. But it also means that it does slow things down, because there's half the personnel to be able to process the paperwork.
Phew. My goodness. All right, so you've got this order that comes from the Chief Judge of the Supreme Court. There's no timetable on this, is there? In other words, this is going to be in place until they deem it safe to go back to normal functions.
That's right. He's basically looking at the numbers that are presented to him, and with the rising numbers that we've had lately, and we've also, and I don't know any specifics, but statewide, we've had some judges who've had COVID, been exposed, attorneys the same way. And so to cut down on the potential complete shutdown of a judicial system, he's made the decision to lessen the likelihood of that possibility by, you know, keeping everything virtual except for these emergency cases. And it'll stay that way until there can be a determination, and he'll make the ultimate decision of when we'll go back to live, and he's going to give us 2 weeks' notice when he does that.
So last question on this. Does this totally disrupt your schedule? In other words, I don't know how you set it up where you're going to hear so many cases a day in person. Now you're going to do it virtually. Does that speed it up, slow it up? What?
Well, with family court, our dockets get filled up pretty quickly. So I would say for at least the next 3 or 4 months, our dockets were already set from 9:30 in the morning till 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So for us, it then becomes a matter of how we deal with this at this point. So today we've been able to make things work pretty well. But I've got a case Wednesday that is a termination of parental rights, adoption type of a case. I've already spoken with or emailed with the attorneys, and they've agreed that it would be too difficult to do virtually and properly, and so that case will be continued. So that'll be a full-day case that'll come off the docket and be rescheduled later on.
Whew. Well, everybody's just got to drop back and punt during this COVID conference. What a mess. All right, we're going to go ahead and take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Well, we hang out here every day at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Fresh subs and salads 7 days a week prepared right before your eyes. The magical way we do it, everybody will bark out very loudly at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice. Garden, 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 garden.
Got to get in cadence here now, everybody. Back after these words.
12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
This is Charlie Ruffalo. I want to personally thank everyone for supporting Substation 2 during this pandemic. This has not been an easy time for many of us, but you keep coming back day after day for our fresh subs and salads, and that has helped us keep the doors open and our employees on the payroll. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rock Hill and York County, for supporting Substation 2 these past 34 years, and especially now. Substation 2 really loves you. Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Want it? Buy it with a credit card from Founders Federal Credit Union. With low rates, no annual fee, and various card options, you can't go wrong. And keeping up with your card activity has never been easier. Simply open Founders online or the Founders app. Visit foundersfcu.com/visa for more information and to apply for a Founders credit card today. Not a Founders member? Visit Relax, join founders.com to see if you qualify for membership. Terms and conditions apply. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
My concern is let's not let fear of COVID cloud people's judgment about their health. We don't want people sitting at home with heart attacks, stroke. Those things are life-threatening.
Piedmont Medical Center Chief Executive Officer Mark Nosaka expressing his concern about those who fear coming to the ER.
People are still going to have heart disease. They're still going to have heart attacks. They're still going to need heart surgery. And we're providing all those services while we're protecting people from COVID.
Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
Hey, Manning, I hear the gyros are back at Substation 2.
That's right, Alex, and they are great. They're made to order, served hot, on warm, soft pita bread with creamy tzatziki sauce, onion, and tomato. And I can't wait to get one.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
Great. It sounds like we don't have a plan.
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Visit ready.gov/kids and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Family Court Judge David Guyton is with us today, and we're talking about the Supreme Court order that dropped down into his lap last week, which basically said no more in-person court. Everything's going to be done virtually, but it sounds like everything is being taken care of. This is not your first rodeo with this. You've been down this road before.
That's right.
But as you pointed out, the sooner we can get back to face-to-face court, the better you'll like it.
Definitely. And for example, this afternoon when we are doing an adoption, it's really nice to have potentially a big crowd in the courtroom of a family and friends and neighbors who are supporting the adoption itself. And even when we were doing live, we had to reduce the numbers. And then, of course, virtually, you don't get quite the same effect as you do when you're live. And we have teddy bears that we like to give to the children. And so we can't do that virtually. But we still, that's an important thing that we want to be able to keep doing as much as possible. So we don't want to slow down a child not being able to have a forever home because of this.
So let's have some good news for a change on this program. I know adoptions are something near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
And 2020 was a good year for adoptions, particularly what you do at the end of the year when you kind of focus 100% of your attention on getting kids hooked up with parents?
We every year we like to end the year by doing adoptions, the court year. And so we always make sure that the last cases on the docket are adoptions. We had 3 days this year to kind of spread things out, and we had three afternoons of adoptions. Judge White did a day. I did a couple of days. And so, yeah, it's like being Santa Claus to a certain extent, because you're getting to have a child and these new parent or parents legally come together and being told that, you know what, the law recognizes that you are now officially a family. It's the best Christmas present that anybody could ever have.
Isn't that great? From soup to nuts, how long does it take for an adoption case to go from beginning to end?
It's going to depend if, for instance, if it's a step-parent adoption and it's not contested, it's just a matter of getting your paperwork in and getting to the courtroom. It may take six months or maybe a little less. If you have cases in which they can be kind of complicated, in which you maybe have a private adoption, but it's also involving children who have been in the DSS system, maybe they've been in foster care, maybe there's some family members who are trying to adopt themselves or prevent the adoption. If it gets complicated, it could be anywhere from a year to 2 years. And then sometimes these cases get appealed, and you know, the judge issues his order, but if there's a timely appeal, you have that hanging over your head till you know that it's been dealt with. So anywhere from, say, 6 months to a year or longer.
So some of them are a breeze. Others are very difficult and tear at your heart. Are we making the right decision here?
Right, right. And, see, I've seen cases in which I've had the DSS hearings about a particular child or children in front of me with the allegations of neglect or abuse and dealing with that. And the idea is to have those kids either back with their family, reunified, or then at, say, 18 months or so, freed up so that they can be adopted, because they need some kind of stability. Well, if you know, at 18 months they're with foster parents, they may stay with foster parents, they have to be cleared for the adoption to take place. So, I mean, we've seen cases where it may have been, a child may have been in the system 4 or 5 years before finally getting, you know, that forever home. And then, sadly, we do have some kids. Teenagers are hard to adopt. Mm. And so if you get kids that are 13, 14 on up, there's just a small selection of people who are willing to take that chance with those kids.
So when you order that a child be reunited with their parents after they've been separated, percentage-wise, do you expect to see them back in your court again?
I could not tell you a percentage on that. There may be some numbers kept through the Department of Social Services, but it, from a judge's standpoint, it feels like we see a lot of the kids and those families over and over again. It is very frustrating to see a child who is born with drugs in their system going through withdrawal, and then so it's brought to court as an emergency protective custody, one of the exceptions to our proceedings, and then find out that this is the sixth child that mom has had and that she doesn't have custody of any of the others. And you just, you know, that child, unless they get a good foster home and potentially adopted, that the odds are already stacked against them in a lot of ways. It's just heartbreaking.
How do you control yourself by not wanting to reach across that bench and slap them silly for what they're doing to those kids.
Yeah, that's, you know, being patient and
trying
to be even-tempered. It's frustrating. There have been times in the past where I have to take a break and maybe go to my chambers and just
do a few push-ups.
Do a few push-ups or shed a few tears, you know, or tell my secretary why I'm so angry, and then come back into the courtroom. But it's frustrating sometimes.
But the other side of the coin is the reward that you get routinely when you see a perfect match coming together, parents who really wanted to be parents, a child who really needed some parents, and you're able to facilitate that.
It's wonderful, and there's a lot of proceedings that will end. And once you know the whole story, and sometimes I'm the only one who may know by certain information in the file, but I'll often tell parents who are adopting, this is providence, not coincidence. This was meant to be. And I get Christmas cards each year, and sometimes it's from families who will have a picture of their family together, and they'll say, Judge Guyton, you may not remember me, but you did our adoption. You know, that type of thing. And even occasionally around town, I'll see a kid, and they'll come up and say, you're my judge. And so that feels great. It feels wonderful.
So for parents who want to be, for a couple that wants to be parents, and they just haven't hooked up everything, but they're thinking about it and they want to adopt, what's a quick checklist in terms of what you'll be looking for, besides all the paperwork? What are you looking for when you're making a decision as to whether to marry that couple with that child?
Well, there's a lot of background information that has to be gathered and presented, and then it gets put together and presented to me. But you want to make sure, there are background checks, essentially, to make sure. Obviously, you don't want somebody who's on a sexual offender registry adopting.
Right.
So, there's things like that are checked. But financially, you want to make sure that they can handle this child financially. From a medical standpoint, we look at health. And reports that I get will say, well, you know, these people are healthy and they appear physically able to adopt. And you cut to the chase a lot of times by looking at why they want to adopt. And usually, especially in the courtroom, when the attorney says, you know, tell the judge why you wanted to adopt and what led you to this child, and there's usually tears are shed then, because they're just, it's wonderful to hear them say why.
And I would imagine many times you had the advantage of a guardian ad litem for
the
child.
We do. We have the guardians are required. You can't have an adoption without a guardian, even if it's uncontested. And so the guardian does an independent investigation to focus on the child's best interest. And ultimately, that's part of the ruling, is what is in a child's best interest. This adoption is or is not. And of course, the guardian makes a recommendation in that regard. And that plays heavily into a judge's decision as well.
Well, Family Court Judge David Guyton, I thank you for spending 30 minutes with us. It's always interesting and a pleasure to be with you. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you.
Virtually or in person, either way. And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And, of course, we prepare fresh subs and salads 7 days a week here at Substation 2. Now, we're going to try to do this in cadence this time, make sure everybody is on the same, you know, tempo and wavelength. But we're going to tell you how it's done. 1, 2, 3.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice.
Garden, 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 garden. Not bad, not bad. Have a wonderful week. I'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.